Hi, it's Mountain Edition. All the news from the Roaring Fork Valley coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Kristen Kay. I've got reporter Wyatt Orm here in the studio with me. And Wyatt, we have a lot of news to talk about this week.
Yes, we do. Eagle County is taking a breather on development in their little corner of the Roaring Fork Valley. State lawmakers are looking at ways to lower insurance premiums. And if you've been four-wheeling on Pitkin County's roads, beware. The laws banning off-highway vehicles are going to start being enforced.
Also, e-bikes are getting more and more popular, but where can you ride them? And drones may be a fun way to spy on and potentially annoy your neighbors, but Colorado Parks and Wildlife shoots them down for use in hunting.
They shoot them down?
Not literally. All that and more coming up on Mountain Edition. Wyatt, let's start off today by talking about immigration. You and I have talked in the past about sanctuary cities, about towns like Basalt adopting resolutions that say they are a safe harbor for immigrants, but now a different kind of sanctuary is in the news.
Yeah, that's right. Sandra Lopez is a local immigrants' rights activist, and she just went into sanctuary with the Two Rivers Unitarian Universalist Church. She'll be living with her two-year-old daughter at their parsonage, at the church's parsonage.
What does that look like? Where is she going to be living in the parsonage?
She's going to be living in the basement and basically will not be able to leave for the foreseeable future.
Sandra Lopez talked to a crowd who gathered outside the church's parsonage in Carbondale, where she's staying. And Wyatt, you were there.
Yes, I was. It's dusk, and Sandra Lopez is about to go into the house she's standing in front of. She does not know when she'll come out. The crowd standing in the driveway is silent. Only cameras click as she speaks. Lopez has three children. They're U.S. citizens. One is in college, one is in middle school. The youngest, just a toddler, is being held by Reverend Shauna Foster, who lives at the parsonage with her family. Lopez has been fighting a deportation order for years. She's consistently been given a pass to stay in the country by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Last week, though, she was told no more passes. Here's Lopez's attorney, Jennifer Smith.
I did make a phone call to ICE and was informed that, you know, this is a temporary solution and she's had this a couple years, so her temporary time is up.
By going into sanctuary, Lopez is very publicly seeking protection from deportation. And she's doing it through a church because
the Department of Homeland Security has consistently maintained that places of worship are a safe space.
Homeland Security oversees ICE. So Lopez is in the safe space, but she can't leave it.
If she needs something, we have to bring it to her. If we need to talk to her, we can talk to her on the phone, or we need to come in person.
Lopez's new quarters are in the parsonage basement. They're bare and unremarkable. She'll sleep on the small mattress on the floor. She doesn't know how long this house will be her entire world.
No lo sé, esa es una pregunta muy difícil.
I don't know. It's a hard question. I don't know how long I'll be here. I don't know if I'll be able to leave. But it's obvious I'm sacrificing a lot. My home. I'm abandoning my role as a mother. Abandoning my work. All to be in sanctuary.
Lopez is originally from Mexico. She's been in the Roaring Fork Valley since 2001. The only reason ICE knows about her is because she was arrested in 2010. She says one of her children mistakenly called 911. At that time, any run-in with the law could mean ICE learns about you. That's since been ruled unconstitutional. But even though Lopez's charges were immediately dropped, and she says she's no criminal, she still feels sanctuary is her only option.
No tenemos otras opciones.
We don't have other options. I tried to do everything right, and no, I can't. I can't keep going forward this way.
I can't. I'm trying, but I can't.
Jennifer Smith isn't convinced going into sanctuary will change ICE's mind. While she hopes she can get the court to reopen Lopez's case, going public like this could catch the eye of a politician. Or maybe it influences immigration reform. But ultimately, it keeps a mother close to her kids. Is this an act of civil disobedience?
I guess you could see it that way.
Right.
But I think it's more an act for her of showing that she is not ready to be separated from her family permanently.
Lopez is one of five people in sanctuary in Colorado. And before she goes inside the house, with no sense for when she'll next leave, the crowd chants encouragement for her and for the others in sanctuary.
So there seem like a lot of unanswered questions, not the least of which is how long she'll stay.
Yeah, and I mean, she'll be there until something changes in her case, but there is really no sense for when or what or how anything will change at this point.
What was your impression of how Sandra Lopez is handling all this?
To me, she seemed emotional, but also poised. I mean, I think that she was kind of well aware of the choice that she'd made. And she was very poised when she was talking to the crowd and when she was talking to the media, but did seem very upset.
Okay, moving on to Colorado state news. The U.S. Senate passed the budget for next fiscal year with no Democratic support. Colorado's two senators voted with their respective parties.
This paves the way for the GOP to overhaul taxes. They hope to pass something in the coming months. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
Republican Senator Cory Gardner joined GOP calls to repeal the estate tax. It allows a gift of up to $5.4 million to an heir with no taxes. Any amount above that is taxed.
We have a tax that causes families to have to confront breaking up businesses that have been in the family for generations or selling off the family farm just to keep what they've built and what they've already paid taxes on, all because somebody died.
But Democrats say the estate tax impacts only a very small number of farmers, and repealing it is a giveaway to the extremely wealthy. Senator Michael Bennett says cutting corporate taxes and getting rid of the estate tax would increase the national debt by trillions of dollars. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Colorado lawmakers are already trying to find ways to lower health insurance premiums on the individual market. Rates could go up on average by 34% next year.
As Benta Berkland reports, a big concern is that healthy people will opt out of health coverage altogether and make the insurance problem even worse.
Bob Collins lives in Thornton. He's a small business owner and the father of three. He says he'll be paying $18,000 in premiums alone to cover his family next year. It's an increase of about 40%.
My wife and I would dump it in a heartbeat if we didn't have kids.
Collins was among a handful of residents who spent time at the state capitol last week telling the Division of Insurance and lawmakers how the health insurance rates would hurt them.
They talk about wanting a healthier base, but you say that, but then what you're doing is the exact opposite because there is no incentive for someone healthy to pay that much out of pocket.
Most Coloradans get health insurance through Medicaid, Medicare, or their employer, but about 500,000 people are on the individual market. Next year's premium increase will only impact people who don't get a federal subsidy. And that's what worries Insurance Commissioner Marguerite Salazar. She says this group is decidedly middle class and includes many who can't yet retire.
They're going to go uninsured. They're going to put themselves at risk of medical bankruptcies. And, you know, if they do get sick or need to go to the doctor, they'll have to pay it all out of pocket.
Insurance company representatives were also at the Capitol. They say a pool with sicker people, medical costs going up, and President Trump's executive order repealing subsidy payments to insurers are all factors for the rate hike. Charlie Sheffield is with the Colorado Association of Health Plans.
We are not at all enthused about those increases and see them as a necessary component to continue to provide coverage.
But while many were angry at Trump's executive order, Adam Atherley says the focus is overblown. He's a professor of health economics at the University of Colorado. Trump's order added 6% to premiums in Colorado.
This is a continuation of a trend that's been going on. 4 or 5 years ago, the exchanges seemed like they had a tremendous promise and that this was a place where you might see a lot of people buying their insurance within a few years. And that promise has just largely not been realized.
At the state level, both Democrats and Republicans are discussing a proposal that would reimburse insurance companies for high-cost patients. They hope it would help lower premiums for everyone and free up more federal money for the state. Democratic Representative Chris Kennedy of Lakewood may sponsor the legislation, but he says there are still lots of questions.
If we don't figure out how to pay for it, it may or may not be worthwhile. I think we're still investigating that question of, do we have the money? Is this kind of program worth the savings we could achieve?
any legislation would likely require all ratepayers on the individual market to pay a fee. It would also need some state money. Republican Representative Bob Rankin of Carbondale serves on the Joint Budget Committee. He says it's a doable option.
Everybody has these stories where families can't have a baby, you know, or can't open a business, or things that life's all about. We can't just increase everybody's rates and not come up with a solution.
In his district on the Western Slope, premiums will go up by 40%. That's why Rankin is sponsoring a bill to create just one statewide insurance rate. He says he wants to improve how the markets work, even though he wishes Congress would undo the Affordable Care Act.
I'd like to see him repeal Obamacare and come up with a better solution. I mean, however, what that solution is been talked about for 7 years and they can't agree. So I, like everybody else, I'm just really frustrated about what the solution is or can be or will be.
He says Trump's executive order contributing to higher rates isn't helpful. 18 states are suing to block it, but not Colorado. Governor John Hickenlooper has joined a bipartisan group of governors asking Congress to pass legislation to stabilize insurance markets. For residents facing tough choices like Bob Collins, he doesn't think relief will ever come.
And what I see is a high level of apathy, just inaction, right? And people saying it's not my fault. I mean, how could you have confidence in anything productive happening? It's ridiculous.
A federal judge is expected to rule this week on the state lawsuit to block Trump's executive order and allow the Obamacare subsidy payments to continue for insurers. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Wyatt Orme.
And I'm Kristen Kay. And Wyatt, obviously, if people are listening to Mountain Edition, they want to stay in the know about local news, right?
Absolutely. And they can stay on top of what's happening with Aspen Public Radio and throughout the community by liking our Facebook page.
On our Facebook page, you can interact with our station through comments on our posts and even by messaging us directly.
You can also go there for breaking news, and this week, check out our photo of an e-bike that's headed up a trail. Not to spoil things, but it does look a lot like a normal bike.
Check it out by searching Aspen Public Radio on Facebook. Wyatt, have you ever tried Nordic skiing?
I have, and it's very hard.
Well, Elizabeth Stewart-Severy has this story on two Aspen natives who are, it's safe to say, probably a little better at it than you.
Nordic skiers Simi Hamilton and Noah Hoffman are headed to Europe to compete on the World Cup circuit, and then on to Pyeongchang for the 2018 Winter Olympics. Hamilton is the top male Nordic racer in the U.S., ranked 9th in the world. The U.S. cross-country ski team does not receive federal funding. It's the only team on the international circuit that doesn't. The team operates on a significantly smaller budget than its competitors. Top-ranked Norway has $11 million, while the U.S. team budget doesn't crack a million. And that means athletes need to chip in on fundraising efforts. Hamilton and Hoffman will kick off the winter competition season with a fundraiser at the Belly Up on Friday night at 5:30. The first World Cup races are in November in Finland. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio News.
Eagle County's Board of Commissioners voted 3-0 to enact a 6-month moratorium on zone change applications.
Property owners hoping to rezone, whether to build housing or commercial space, won't be able to until the spring. The moratorium is effective immediately, but it only applies to property larger than 5 acres that's in Eagle County's slice of the Roaring Fork Valley. This gives the county's planning department a chance to reevaluate the Mid-Valley Area Community Plan and hear the public's thoughts on it. The plan outlines what type of development is and isn't appropriate for the community. Recent land use applications have been so contentious, Eagle's commissioners are hoping to revisit and clarify the plan.
Wyatt, you were at that meeting. What was the mood like?
Well, first of all, there were less people there than I'm usually accustomed to in those situations. There were people there that were for the moratorium, people against the moratorium. I felt that both sides presented very reasonable arguments. But I think that, you know, because some of the most recent land use applications have been so contentious in the community, the Eagle County commissioners kind of ultimately sounded like they just needed a timeout and they needed to reassess things.
Well, let's take a little time out ourselves from politics for a minute. Let's go to the arts. The season opener for Soper's Theater Company at Colorado Mountain College is Tom Stoppard's play Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Claire Woodcock has more.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead is an absurdist, existentialist tragicomedy. It was first staged at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe in 1966. Stoppard's play focuses on the two minor characters from William Shakespeare's Hamlet. The two protagonists express confusion over the events taking place without them, as major characters from Hamlet carry on, and the New York Drama Critics Circle Award for Best Play that same year. Soper's Theatre Company's production is directed by G. Thomas Cochran and will be staged at the New Space Theatre at Colorado Mountain College, Spring Valley. Claire Woodcock, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
Are absurdist, existentialist tragicomedies your favorite comedies?
I've never actually seen this play, and I really, really want to.
Me neither. I'm a huge fan of Hamlet, though, so I'll have to check it out.
I've actually never seen Hamlet.
Get out of the studio.
Moving on, about one-third of Colorado cities and towns are holding elections on November 7th. The most common question voters face is whether to allow their community to explore other options for receiving broadband.
Benta Berkland has more.
State law requires cities and towns that want to consider other ways of getting broadband to first ask voters. Kevin Balmer is the deputy director of the Colorado Municipal League, which advocates for cities and towns at the state capitol. He says 69 cities have already passed similar questions.
Just a continuation of the theme we've seen all along. Folks aren't happy with their existing broadband service. They want to empower their local government to explore other options,
such as a public-private partnership with the city owning the infrastructure, or in some cases, the city providing broadband. Even with pushback from the telecom industry, all of the previous elections on the issue have so far been successful. I'm Benta Berkland.
Off-highway vehicles like ATVs have long been illegal on Pitkin County roads, but the policy hasn't been enforced. That will change soon. Environment reporter Elizabeth Stewart-Severy is here to talk about how the county plans to start enforcing the law. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Kristen.
So people may have seen these four-wheelers zooming up Aspen Mountain all summer, but you're telling us that's actually illegal.
Right. There's a state law that prohibits off-highway vehicles on county roads unless that county passes an ordinance or ordinances allowing them on certain roads. And Pitkin County does not have roads that are legal for this. And actually, Aspen Mountain is kind of where this issue came to a head. Brian Pettit with Pitkin County tells me that the county has gotten a lot of complaints from people on Aspen Mountain or on the backside of Aspen Mountain, where they're seeing a lot more traffic of off-highway vehicles.
People can drive cars on these roads, so what's the difference?
Well, they don't have safety features like headlights and things like that. They're also smaller and faster and can reach places further into the backcountry than a highway-rated car, or truck, or Jeep would be able to. So because they can go further into the backcountry, people complain about things like noise, pollution, and resource damage in these places that are expected to be somewhat pristine. Pitkin County hasn't been able to enforce it. That falls on the sheriff's office, but the sheriff's office says, you know, we don't have the ability to police into the backcountry. And so the commissioners kind of decided something needs to change. We either need to start enforcing the law or we need to open up some roads to off-highway vehicles.
So tell us why the commissioners ended up going with enforcing the current law.
Yeah, they opened it up to a public process over the summer and they got over 480 comments. Those comments were pretty split. So Pettit breaks it down this way. About 60% of the respondents who live in Pitkin County said they wanted to see enforcement. But 60% of people outside of the county, including people with these kind of national organized off-highway vehicles groups, wanted to see a change in the law. Ultimately, the commissioners voted unanimously to kind of protect resources and err on the side of enforcing the law.
So how does the county plan to enforce this?
Well, the county has decided to enter into an agreement with the Forest Service because Pitkin County sheriffs say that they can't take on this extra responsibility. So today, the commissioners will look at adding $35,000 to the budget to enter into an agreement with the Forest Service that gives the Forest Service jurisdiction over county roads. They'll need to kind of sort out the details of the agreement, and the plan is for that to start happening early in 2018.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Wyatt Orm.
and I'm Kristen Kay. In other local news this week, Pitkin County commissioners discussed a climate action plan that details how county departments can reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
Aspen's Next Generation Advisory Commission came under fire after suggesting trade downs as a way of opening employee units.
And motorists encountered delays in downtown Aspen earlier this week as the city realigned a popular intersection.
You can read about those news stories and more on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Drones are showing up in some pretty unexpected places these days.
I know, I've seen them all over. I did a full lap around Crown Mountain Park with my dog, and a drone followed us the whole way. It cannot be that riveting.
Now, law enforcement with Colorado Parks and Wildlife say they're seeing more hunters using drones to track wildlife. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy has the details.
The use of drones for hunting breaks state regulations and the Federal Airborne Hunting Act. Travis Duncan from CPW explains that it's also a violation of what's known as the fair chase ethic.
Hunting is about an intimate relationship with wildlife, and that you're spoiling that by hunting in a way that is not fair to the wildlife, that gives you an unfair advantage.
Noise from drones can also harass wildlife, and that's illegal as well. Penalties for violating drone laws range from $70,000 to over $100,000 if it involves illegally killing an animal. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Colorado Mountain College relies on property taxes for about two-thirds of its funding. But because of massive growth on the Front Range, property taxes are actually being lowered, so there's less revenue for CMC. This November, CMC's board has a question for voters in six counties, including Pitkin, Eagle, and Garfield. Can CMC's board tinker with local property taxes to make up for this loss in revenue? Wyatt, you've been following this issue. First off, why would growth on the Front Range mean CMC is losing money?
Basically, when Colorado collects property taxes each year, there has to be this balance between residential and commercial property tax. 45% is supposed to come from homes and 55% from businesses.
That's the Gallagher Amendment, right?
Exactly. This is written into the state's constitution. You have this ratio, right? And it's locked in place. All the while, houses on the Front Range are cropping up left and right. So what that means is that kind of a smaller and smaller percentage of everybody's homes becomes taxable.
So if you own a house, you're thinking, that sounds great.
Yeah, I don't see why not. It does, however, put CMC in a tight spot and other special districts that rely on property taxes. I spoke with Glenn Davis. He's the president of CMC's board. He made the case that CMC provides a lot of value. Not only does it provide higher education to a group of students who otherwise probably wouldn't be able to access it, it also creates a lot of jobs. The question to voters is, what's it worth to you?
So let's talk about that question. Voters up and down the Roaring Fork Valley are being asked yes or no on ballot question 4B. What exactly is that question asking?
So if and when the state legislature has to bring down the residential rates, and again, that's to keep that 45-55 balance, right? A yes vote on ballot question 4B is basically saying to the CMC board, you can tax us to keep your revenue levels somewhat consistent going forward.
So this is just slowing the downward skid for CMC's funding. It's not stopping it entirely.
I mean, growth on the Front Range does not look like it's going to slow down, right? Of course, this is all particular to the Gallagher Amendment. So I suppose one fix would be repealing the Gallagher Amendment.
So we've talked about homeowners. What effect would 4B have on commercial property owners?
If 4B passes, it will raise commercial property taxes. There's one mill levy that CMC uses. A mill levy is basically a property tax. That mill levy covers both residential and commercial property tax. If they raise it at all, it applies both to homeowners and to business owners.
Okay, thank you, Wyatt.
You're welcome.
Electric bikes have cruised to popularity, but local governments are scrambling to keep up. Changes in state laws have left a patchwork of policies, and e-bikers aren't always sure where they can ride. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy took to the trails to check out the new technology and brings us this report.
On a recent afternoon, I joined Kevin Byford, the co-owner of Aspen Bikes, for a ride. I jump on the bike, push down on the pedal, and whoa! The bike takes off a little faster than I anticipated. As soon as you start pedaling, the motor engages. This also means that for what is usually a bit of a grind up the Smuggler Dirt Road, I don't feel like I'm doing very much.
Are you enjoying yourself?
Yes, very much. Byford rents pedal-assisted e-bikes, meaning you have to be pedaling to get any help from the motor. There are three levels of power, and no matter what, the motor on these e-bikes caps out at 20 miles per hour. The extra help makes you feel stronger and move faster, but it doesn't do all the work for you.
Yeah, it's like having a fast-forward button for those sections of a ride that don't really interest you.
As soon as you stop pedaling, the motor shuts off. And when it is assisting as we ride, it's nearly silent.
So it's just not that far away from traditional biking. It's a lot further away from motorbiking, you know, than it is from biking.
State legislators agree. In July, a bill passed that allows e-bikes on pedestrian and bike paths in Colorado, unless local jurisdictions choose otherwise. Some commuters, like Tyler Lindsay, have embraced the new technology as a way to get cars off the road.
If my goal is to move 150 pounds of meat and bone up and down the valley, 50 pounds of metal and plastic is a much better tool for doing that than 4,000 pounds of metal and plastic.
Lindsay commutes from Woody Creek to the Aspen Business Center by bike every day, summer or winter, rain or shine. He says using an e-bike in the winter months keeps that commute doable.
In the winter when it's cold and you have to put on a whole bunch of layers, carry a snowboard, wear snowboard boots, a regular bike just isn't really practical, and an e-bike is.
Plus, he says, biking is more in line with the community's environmental ideals, and a bike path is a lot safer than the highway. The Roaring Fork Transportation Authority manages the Rio Grande Trail from Glenwood Springs to Emma. Its board recently voted to allow e-bikes on that section of the popular path. Part of that decision was an effort to alleviate traffic backups from the Grand Avenue Bridge construction. RAFTA's Angela Henderson says the new technology also makes cycling accessible to more people.
But there was also a discussion around the fact that our population is aging, that we're going to see more and more people in the valley needing some assistance.
RAFTA doesn't have exact numbers, but says people are using e-bikes on the trail for both recreation and for commuting. Although, if people are using the upper Rio Grande for that purpose, they're breaking the law. The section that runs from Emma to Aspen is managed by Pitkin County, which still bans e-bikes on trails, for now.
This is a 10-foot wide trail. Wasn't necessarily built to have e-bikes out on it. So we may have to look at some safety upgrades.
RAFTA's estimates show 85,000 users on the trail every year, and that includes families, dogs, runners, equestrians, rollerbladers, cyclists of all ability levels, from kids with training wheels to what Henderson calls the Tour de France crowd of serious road bikers.
If we add another layer of e-bikes, we need to make sure that whatever we do, we make it as safe as possible for all of those uses.
RAFTA is heading up efforts to analyze where e-bikes might be appropriate in the Roaring Fork Valley. The goal is to have one set of rules that governs the Rio Grande from Glenwood Springs all the way to Aspen. Commuter Tyler Lindsay welcomes the conversation.
I also think that it's valuable for new technologies like this to come in and sort of force a rethink of existing ways of doing things and legal frameworks for, you know, running society.
Even when it might be easier and warmer to drive, Lindsay thinks it's important to stay on the bike and off the highways.
Yeah, even if you have to break the law.
For now, law-abiding e-bikers in Pitkin County will have to stick to only those areas where other motorized vehicles can go. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
That's all for Mountain Edition this week. Wyatt, any of these stories inspire a Halloween costume for you?
I think I'm going to be an e-bike.
I don't know what that even looks like. I think that I would be a deer using drones to avoid hunters.
To hear the show again or to find more news from the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.